Now, are you up for playing a little game? I promise it's nothing too strenuous. I'm going to say a word. Let a picture form in your mind. No judgment. Just notice the picture that appears for you. Okay, ready? First word, scientist. What did you see? Now, if your mind delivered a man, maybe wearing glasses in a lab, you know, working on something like a big old chemistry set, well, then you're like the majority of Americans.
It's alive! It's alive! It's alive!
Okay, next word, athlete. What did you see? Now, was your mental picture something like NFL Sports Sunday? Because if it is, then hey, you're like most people. All right, last word. Political leader. Again, what did you see? Was it a tall man standing behind a podium giving a speech? If so, again, you're just like most of us. And by now, you've likely noticed something. These words, scientist, athlete, political leader, they're all broad, gender-neutral terms, but they tend to evoke narrow, gender-specific mental pictures. Jane Goodall, observing gorillas, is as much a scientist as a white-coated male chemist. Simone Biles is as much an athlete as the college men of March Madness. And Nancy Pelosi is every bit a political leader as the 45 men who've occupied the White House since our founding. But far too often, the images we see in the world around us reinforce a gendered vision of the political world. So we asked you what the words political leader evoked. And here's what you told us.
These days, I want my political leaders to be 20 years younger, female, and less white. They should be well-educated in civics and politics and demonstrate involvement in their constituent communities. My name is Tom Kate, and I live in Sacramento, California.
I would like a leader like Joe Biden, if not Joe Biden, to lead this country. You know, we need men of courage. My name is John. I'm from East Hampton, New York.
Hi, this is Julie Carey from Ashland, Kentucky. And the ones that come to my mind actually are all female. I'm thinking of Katie Porter. I'm thinking of Amy Klobuchar, Elizabeth Warren, Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez. They speak the way people can understand, and not in this political speak, but they speak plainly in common, plain language. And they talk about issues that people really care about.
Hi, this is Ed Lance from downtown Los Angeles. I would like to describe my ideal political leader. That would be someone who is devoted to service and acting in the best interest of all parties involved. Not in it for the money. Doesn't have to be an angel. They say a dirty word or something, we're not going to throw them out. We are looking to them for their service.
When I imagine a political leader, I want to imagine the exact opposite of Mitch McConnell. I imagine someone who puts people before power, can actually make a compromise, and helps the government work and doesn't stop it dead in its tracks just because they don't like the way things are going.
This is Melanie from Macedonia, Ohio. I think of a political leader as somebody with a bad haircut and nice teeth.
For just a moment, I want you to sit down, settle in, and get ready for a little story time with MHP. I'm going to read to you from one of my favorite books, Grace for President. It's written by Kelly DiPuccio. And Grace, the main character, is a little black girl. She's attending the fictional Woodrow Wilson Elementary School. And here's how the book begins. One Monday morning in September, Mrs. Barrington rolled out a big poster with all the president's pictures on it. Grace Campbell could not believe her eyes. Where are all the girls? That's a very good question, said Mrs. Barrington. The truth is, our country has never had a woman president. No girl president ever? Asked Grace. I'm afraid not, said Mrs. Barrington. Grace sat at her desk and stewed. No girls? Who'd ever heard of such a crazy thing? Okay, I'm going to stop here. But I do encourage all of you to find and finish this book because Grace decides to run for president of her school. And it turns out she's a hardworking idealist who is not easily deterred. Mrs. Barrington is one great teacher. And just wait until you meet Thomas Cobb and Wyoming Sam. But for at least a decade, I've been gifting Grace for President to young girls and to their parents in hopes that these daughters will be able to see past the presidential posters showing only boys and find a way to see themselves in American democracy. New research published in the American Political Science Review last month suggests that gendered political socialization is a powerful force, deterring many girls from pursuing the possibility of a political life. And for more on this, we're joined now by Zoe Oxley, who's professor of political science at Union College. Zoe, it is lovely to have you here.
Thanks so much, Melissa. I look forward to talking to you.
So what exactly is gendered political socialization?
So gendered political socialization is really a intermingling of two types of socialization that children are exposed to. On the one hand, through the process of gender socialization, children learn which adult roles are typically held by women, such as caregiving roles, nurturing roles, and which roles are typically held by men, such as managers or leadership roles. Gender socialization also teaches children which traits women and girls are expected to possess and which traits boys and men are expected to possess. So at the same time gender socialization is happening, kids are also learning about the political world. The process of political socialization exposes children to government and politics, including, as Grace does in the book that you just read from, including kids learn who have been political leaders in the past, and by omission, who haven't been leaders in the past. Kids also learn about governmental structures through the media, through school curricula. They learn about what activities take place in the political world. My colleagues and I argue that these two streams come together to produce gendered political socialization. So children learn that politics has been in the past and actually still is today dominated by men. They also learn that the political world is quite masculine, values competition, assertiveness, and less often in the political world do we see traits of compassion, nurturance, and those traits that girls are socialized to think that they need to possess. So from a variety of sources, individuals as well as mass media and other sources, girls really receive the message that politics is not a domain for them, that politics is really for boys and for men.
And when does this gendered political socialization begin? Or perhaps it begins at the beginning, but when do we begin to really see its effects?
So gender socialization actually happens very, very young. And scholars have long documented from infants and toddlers picking certain toys to play with, certain activities to engage with. Political socialization more likely starts in elementary school. That's certainly when children get exposed through their social studies classes from their teachers about political history. But children are also exposed through the media, through conversations with their parents, depending upon the political interest and activity level of the household.
How does all this fit with the current sort of numeric underrepresentation of women in elected office? Are you thinking there's a direct line of causality that maybe whatever is causing one is also causing the other? What is your at least hunch about how they connect?
My colleagues and I have long been interested in women's underrepresentation in political office and have worked on research in the past trying to understand why. We know from past scholarship that adolescent boys and girls are already showing distinct levels of interest in politics generally, but also a desire maybe to have a political job in the future. So we wondered whether young children as well show varying levels of interest in politics. So the project that we undertook at one of the goals was to examine whether girls and boys do show, again, different levels of interest in politics and different levels of curiosity really about learning about politics and government. We uncovered that kids as young as around 10 years old, we start to see a divergence with girls being less interested than boys in the political domain. Actually, at a younger age, right around age six, there really aren't that differences between boys and girls. But as girls age between 6 and 12, they steadily decline in their level of curiosity and excitement about politics, whereas boys' interest stays relatively level. We also asked children, these were kids in grades 1 through 6, we asked them what kind of jobs they might like to hold in the future. Among those jobs listed were some political jobs like president, governor, judge. And we find there as well that girls show a steady decrease in interest in any of the political jobs as they age from about age 6 to about age 12. At every age, boys were more interested in these political careers than were girls, but the gap widened as these children aged up through grade 6.
Now, I am fascinated by one particular aspect of how you studied this gendered political socialization. Can you tell me about the DAPL, the Draw a Political Leader task?
When we were designing our study, we drew pretty heavily from research in science, technology, engineering, and math. These STEM fields have, for decades now, asked kids to do a drawing task called Draw a Scientist, where the children were asked to envision what they think a scientist looks like and then draw what they envisioned. What we did was adopt this task, which we call the Draw a Political Leader task, but very similarly, we asked kids to shut their eyes and think about what a political leader looks like. And then we gave them a piece of paper and some crayons and asked them to draw what they had envisioned. We also asked them a few pretty brief follow-up questions to get some more information about what they had in mind. We collected these drawings from about 1,600 elementary school kids from 4 different research sites across the country. We coded them then. In particular, we wanted to know whether kids drew men or women as political leaders. And what we find is that among these age groups, all children, boys and girls, were more likely to draw men. But the more interesting and perhaps disturbing finding, if you're believing that politics should be a domain for girls, as girls grew older, they were more likely to draw men than when they were younger. So put another way, when they're around 6 years of age, girls were less likely to draw men than boys were. But by age 10, the girls and the boys were equally likely to draw men because girls had changed their visions of what a political leader is and were more likely to envision political leadership as being really the domain of men.
I'm wondering, since there is this increasing separation of girls from interest and from their own sense of being representative of political leaders, that gets worse as they get older. I'm wondering if we see in school leadership positions a similar gap. So are girls less likely to run for president of the senior class? Are they less likely to run for class senator in college? Or if this really tends to manifest in our adult political world?
It certainly manifests most strongly in the adult political world. At the high school level, some other research that I'm familiar with has found that girls actually are quite likely to run for student council or student class presidents, other kind of student government offices in high school. But by college, we start to see girls being less interested in running for student government. So there's something about this, you know, switch from high school to college that sends a message to girls and young women that leadership, government leadership at their colleges and universities, but then also out in the political domain, isn't a place for them.
So how can all of us be more like Mrs. Barrington and actually nurture and boost the political interest and ambition of the girls in our classrooms, in our households, and in our lives?
I think a few things might be useful. Certainly school curricula, so those of us who are teachers, school curricula could be diversified to expose children, boys and girls, to examples of women who have been leaders in the past. So to the degree that a school curricula focuses on U.S. history of leadership only on presidents, right, then there's only male examples. But there are certainly lots of other kinds of leaders in the politics as well as in government that have been women. Also, school curricula could emphasize the diversity and kinds of leadership traits that are valued in politics and more broadly in our society. So moving away from this notion that masculine traits of assertiveness and aggression and things of that nature are what we would expect in the political domain. So starting to present a different picture to kids, both of who leaders can be and how leaders can behave, I think would be useful. In terms of those of us who aren't teachers, but even in our other parts of our lives, certainly showing kids examples of leadership in many different domains, boys and girls, but maybe especially girls, emphasizing leadership skills that they may be building elsewhere, whether it be in some clubs and activities or in their neighborhoods or just among their friend group, and discussing how those can be translated into the world of politics. Those are some, I think, steps that we could all take individually. But, you know, at the end, it is important to recognize that the processes of gender socialization and what we call gendered political socialization are pretty strong.
Zoe Oxley is professor of political science at Union College. Professor Oxley, thank you so much for joining us.
Thank you so much.